Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing a number of UK equities, some particularly big movers out there on the day, as well as the key market themes out there. And to do that, we have with us Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being back with us this morning.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, we're looking here at a market which is looking fairly soggy at the moment. It's been looking fairly soggy all week. It's been taking the lead from over the pond in the United States, where there are ongoing concerns about interest rates. Now, we're recording this on Wednesday morning, where there's a lot of speculation and rumour in the air that there's going to be a 0.5% increase in interest rates in the Federal Reserve tonight. And that's been really driving a lot of volatility in markets. We're seeing moves, particularly in tech stocks and US equities. We're seeing big moves in bond markets, which is rattling some investors. I mean, when we're looking at this, and Alan, and looking at a potential half a percent increase in interest rates, I have seen some comments that, you know, there's a rumor that it could even be 0.75%, but there's probably people trying to grab a headline there. But, you know, as we see, and this is probably more a question about the bigger picture when you're looking at markets and how markets set up going into such announcements, we've obviously seen volatility going into this announcement. I mean, is it a case that people prepare for such a move? When a move comes, a significant move as much as 0.5% in interest rates, does it then shift to, okay, we've now got that priced into markets, we now then move back to a focus on economic growth and what GDP figures are doing and what that means for companies' earnings?
Absolutely, John. I think, we've got the macro picture, which of course is the Ukraine invasion by Russia, the sanctions there, the refusal by the EU to buy oil in rubles, which is forcing Putin's strategic team to rethink as the economy and Russia crumbles around him. But certainly we've got the issue with Russian energy is driving inflation, and it's also we're seeing German, British, and US bond yields or yields on government debts hitting 1%, 2%, and 3%. These are levels that haven't been seen in years, and of course, in turn, we've had this knock-on effect: borrowing costs for households increase, energy costs we know through the roof, food costs through the roof too. So in order to put a lid on inflation, the weapon of choice, of course, is our interest rate hikes, and I think certainly it's priced in, but it's direction at the moment. The one thing that history has taught us is that in times of conflict, stock markets do generally do well. So given where we are at the moment, the markets are still relatively buoyant. And of course, with the issue of oil prices, we're seeing energy companies, Shell, of course, and BP. BP declared very strong earnings early this week. We're seeing those prices go through the roof. And financial stocks will be benefiting, of course, from the higher interest rates, because of course they can earn more money from the assets that they have on deposit. So it's a curate's egg, really, isn't it? It's good in parts, but overall, I think we're set for a pretty bumpy ride in the coming months, and interest rate hikes in the UK almost certain to follow.
So when we had the recovery from the pandemic, Alan, we saw a big outperformance in US indices. You know, US tech stocks really stormed ahead and we saw big moves in their indices. If you're looking at the S&P 500, Dow Jones and the NASDAQ. Since then, we've seen somewhat of an underperformance and really some quite big sell-offs in those indices compared to the FTSE 100. In your view, is it a time now to maybe start to look back over at the United States and maybe wind down some exposure in FTSE 100 companies, because it has held up quite well? And there was obviously this discussion around the FTSE 100 offering significant value compared to peers for some time, but that seems to have been reversed. Or do you think that the composition of the FTSE 100 being quite heavily weighted towards commodities and financials as compared to tech stocks in the United States still holds some value?
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that last point there, Jonathan. I think out the mix of stocks that represents the FTSE 100 is weighted much more towards commodities. And the fundamentals underpinning those arguments, really, to my mind, will hold firm for some time to come. So I think that's why the FTSE is holding up quite well. We've got the commodity supply squeeze. We all know what's happening with the battery metal industry and clean technology, the drives for those, and the demand for metals. And there simply isn't enough to go around. With Russia supplies being taken out of the picture, that's it. That in itself has put a supply squeeze onto commodities and metals. And of course, the energy squeeze is well documented. Oil prices have jumped again today, up 3%, and will probably continue to rise higher because of the uncertainty. So I think certainly for the FTSE 100, we do of course have to factor in the fact that we've entered May as well. And the old saying, the markets go away in May, may or may not ring true. It'll probably ring true more so for US markets this year than the UK market. But there's uncertainty ahead. But I think the global macro picture and the fundamentals underpinning the evolution in the world as we see it at present, the FTSE 100, I think, is in better shape than the US markets to weather that particular storm.
Indeed, and that's going to be something that's particularly prevalent, I think, going forward. If you're looking at the way that the commodities market is moving, the FTSE 100, and how, you know, day in, day out, we're seeing the miners really support the FTSE when you're comparing it to European peers, as well as the US indices there. So that's going to be the biggest, I feel, theme in markets going forward over the next couple of months. So we're going to discuss a couple of companies now, Alan, quite high profile. And the first is going to be Aston Martin, looking at shares now up 13% on the day. So really pushing on there. What's been driving those strong gains today?
Driving those strong gains. Well, yeah. Beautiful cars.
Really. Give my pun.
Yes, indeed. Aston Martin, of course, came to market arguably massively overvalued, and it's really struggled to engage with investors over the past few years. Value today just over a billion, but shares are up 10% this morning on the back of a very strong set of numbers, and also some fundamental changes in the business. So first quarter revenues jumped 4% to 232.7 million, which is a pretty damn good performance, and it offset a consensus in the city expecting a decline in volumes. Of course, the new DBX 707 will be hitting the production line very shortly. And although the group has said there are supply chain issues, and I know this through speaking to other companies involved in the automotive sector, there are supply chain issues really resulting from Brexit, price increases, and all the rest of it. But nonetheless, Aston said in 2022 it expects cash profits to grow by 50%, and expects to sell 6,600 vehicles, which is pretty good. But I think the thing is, people who buy Aston Martins don't really have the day-to-day cash worries that perhaps the majority of the UK population do. The majority of the population do. If you can afford an Aston Martin, you're already at a certain level in terms of your earnings and your income and cash flow and so on. And obviously the record high fuel prices won't really be bothering you either in that regard. And that's something certainly I think is very supportive to Aston shares. But of course, the one thing that is really missing from the Aston Martin portfolio at the moment is an electric car. But I'm sure they are working on that behind the scenes, and that will sort of help the group help group sales sort of toward the end of the year and going forward. But the other factor I think has also helped drive the share price today. It's announced a new chief executive, the former Ferrari chief executive, Amedeo Felisa. And that's fantastic. You know, that's a real feather in the cap for Aston, given the woes that they've experienced since they've come to market. So, you know, looking at the shares here, I mean, if you look at the year performance, so shares have hit a high of £22.60 on the year, a low of £7, and we're now trading at £9.40 just. So really just off those year lows. And I think, you know, given where we are, this could be the turning point for Aston. And it's a bit of a contrarian play in a sense, because with everything that's going on in the world, why would you buy Aston Martin shares? But ironically, you know, the numbers today do bear out a recovery, and if they expect to grow profits by 50% and sell 6,600 cars, and they bought on the new Ferrari CEO, this could just be the time to buy them.
Indeed. I mean, there's an interesting point there that you brought up about electric cars. I mean, do you feel, and do you think there's maybe a feeling out there amongst so-called petrol heads that as, you know, cars move increasingly towards you know, being electric, and, you know, at some point in the not too distant future, we're not going to see the level of production of petrol and diesel powered cars. That, I mean, if you're looking at an Aston Martin, which is electric, I mean, does that have the same appeal as an Aston Martin, which is currently powered by petrol? Do you feel going forward, and is that a long term problem for Aston Martin?
No, I don't think it is, because the thing is, you know, Aston Martin cars are iconic. I mean, my all time favourite is the Aston Martin DB4. It's just a beautiful thing. I bumped into a guy several years ago who had bought one of these old DB4s, but he'd underneath was a modern chassis. And also a straight six BMW engine, which would shock the purists. But the fella said, "Well, I just want to drive something that looks beautiful and is beautiful, but that is reliable and will start every day." So I think a lot of people buy Aston cars for the look. So I don't think the propulsion system is absolutely vital. I don't think the chassis, you know, having the old original chassis components is vital. You know, people want modern cars that look good. You know, that they're evocative vehicles. They represent the history of the mark and take it in a new direction. And I think Aston Martin, with the brand they have and what that brand stands for, they're past masters at you know, maintaining the legacy of the brand whilst pushing the envelope in regards to technology. So I have no fears on that front at all.
Yeah, so if that comes to pass, as you said before, Alan, looking at these shares here at around £9, you know, given where they were not too long ago, it could be, as you said, quite an interesting recovery play.
Indeed.
Going forward, looking at those shares. So from moving on now from a stock which isn't impacted, one would say, by the cost of living crisis, to one that is very much, you know, within that market and, you know, has that elasticity of demand to some extent with its products and obviously its peers out there, and that's JD Wetherspoons. Obviously, it's you know, a discount pub to some extent compared to some of their peers, but looking at the shares, they're trading slightly down today, Alan. Maybe this long-awaited recovery for JD Wetherspoons is not quite underway yet.
No, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, JD Wetherspoon, it's a bit of an evergreen stock, really, of course, you know, and it wouldn't be complete without CEO Tim Martin and his famous mullet. But you know, we're all, you know, certainly going to the city. There are, you know, some great pubs up there. But the great thing is, of course, you can go into the Cross Keys, which is a Wetherspoons pub in Bishopsgate, and you're paying, you know, really, really cheap money, really very little for each pint. And that's the attraction, I think. You know, they're able to undercut the opposition because they have this huge network and economies of scale. And that's a very popular formula. Of course, you know, the pandemic has wreaked havoc with revenue streams previously, but then we've had the recovery. But it's you know, it's a bit of a mixed bag, really. You know, the company reported like sales for the quarter had fallen 4% compared to sort of pre-pandemic levels. The company sort of said it seemed positive, slightly positive sales trends towards the last few weeks of the period. But of course, during that time, there are a lot of property transactions. Five pubs were moved on, given up at the end of their leases. Leasehold pubs were closed. So the company brought in some cash, but still carrying net debt of over 900 million, which is expected to fall slightly to 870 million at the end of the year. So the company's trading on a market cap of just under a billion. £14.20 was the year high, £7.08 is the year low. And we're literally just bumping along the bottom at that level at the moment. And of course, it's a glass half full, half empty. I think the Wetherspoons formula will always work. And I know, you know, a lot of, you know, the guys that I see and, you know, will go out for a beer, you know, they'll choose a Wetherspoon pub if it's a decent pub because the beer prices are so good. And that's the big attraction. And that really underscores the key attraction for the group. And of course, there are the group also has around 50 Wetherspoons hotels as well. So there's a different revenue stream for the group there going forward. How's it going to shape up going forward? Will it recover from here? Well, I think it's a stock you could probably give the benefit of the doubt to. You know, as the city comes back to life, of course, John, we were talking earlier about the conferences that we're going to this year. You know, whereas last year we'd have been doing stuff virtually, online conferencing. Now we're starting to move back towards you know, conventional conferences and seminars and go and see people again. And of course, what that does, it'll bring people to the seminars. They'll go out for a meal or something to drink afterwards. And the chances are the Wetherspoons pubs will be one of the pubs that benefits from that. So in a sense, where we are now with the share price looks quite good value. But of course, you know, I think you could look to maybe a short-term gain over the summer in terms of trading. What that look like at the end of the year is anyone's guess. Will there be more lockdowns? You know, where will we be? So an uncertain outlook, but probably give it the benefit of the doubt for now.
Yes. I mean, I think looking at the numbers that are coming out, we're seeing recovery. It's a slow recovery. But I think one thing that is on the side of Wetherspoon shares is if we are starting to see this cost of living crisis coming and really pinch people. Mm. This is people still are going to want to go out for a drink. They want to go out and socialise. You know, it's part of the British culture, and to do that, if it means going to a cheaper venue that you're going to spend less on your night out, Wetherspoons in many cases is going to be that venue of choice for people. So, you know, as we open up, and of course, as you said there, if you see any lockdowns, that will be a real hammer blow to Wetherspoons. But if we don't, and if we start to see, you know, the cost of living crisis really start to hurt people's spending power, I think that's probably going to be quite positive for Wetherspoons going forward. And indeed, if we have a period of good weather throughout the summer, because that's something, if you look at trading statements of pubs, as we get into the autumn, it's not uncommon for them to blame a poor period of trading on the weather. So let's hope for good weather for their shares as well. So we're going to finish off now, Alan, with a company that's had an astronomical rise over the past week. Its vast resources were now trading just above the 2 pence Mark, about a week ago now, we were trading at around 0.3 of a penny. So a huge move there, Alan. What's been happening?
Well, quite a lot. It's been, you know, the 3rd of May was a landmark day for the company, where literally everything changed as soon as the, what, three announcements were released first thing in the morning yesterday. Of course, last week shares were bumping along the bottom at 0.2p, 0.23p, you know, very little happening. And then yesterday, the fortunes of the company changed. So just to say that, of course, the shares have traded as high as 10p on the year and as low as 0.08p. So quite a range, and it's jumped up from those levels to as you say, 2.5p as we talk today, giving the company a market cap of 12.4 million. So Vast Resources, it's an AIM-listed mining group with mines and projects in Romania and Zimbabwe. The chairman is a fellow called Brian Moretz, who's been with the company for many years. He's very much over the years, he's through Grant Thornton, he's floated over companies on AIM under his leadership. And of course, the chief executive is Andrew Prelia, who's been involved with Vast since 2013 and has very much been instrumental in spearheading the development of the company's portfolio in Romania. And Andrew's got a lot of PR experience too, so he's very much the consummate professional in this field. So in terms of the assets the company owns, it's 100% owns the Bataplai polymetallic mine in the Abyssinian Mountains in Transylvania, home of Count Dracula, no less. Now, the Bataplai project has a compliant reserve or mineral resource estimate of 15,700 tons of copper, with a further 1.8 to 3 million tons as an initial exploration target. But with the work that's been done recently, they're working on a large target there of up to 6 million tons of copper, which of course would be transformational if that comes into play. The company also owns, and these are 100% owned again, the Manela polymetallic mine in Romania. It's been on care and maintenance since 2015, but the company are working to recommence production. And in Zimbabwe, Vast Resources has up to a 75% interest, subject to milestones being hit, of the community diamond concession within the Marange diamond fields in Zimbabwe. That's at Chiadza. And there's also an agreement to acquire up to 90% of the Gargu diamond mine in Botswana, subject to various milestones being hit. So that's the background to the company. What happened on May the 2nd? Well, a company that called Atlas Special Opportunities, where a $300,000 bond was owed to by Vast Resources. Atlas Special Opportunities agreed to convert that $300,000 bond into 89 million shares, just over 89 million shares, at 0.27p. So at a stroke, that sort of bond legacy was resolved. The company then announced it had participated in a new joint venture in Tajikistan with an open joint stock company called, a long convoluted name, but Takeoff for short. The engagement with Takeoff generates a number of benefits for the group. Of course, the Bataplai polymetallic mine is generating some revenues for the company, but instantly from the Takeoff arrangement, there'd be a near-term revenue stream opportunity. And this comes from ore processing to produce zinc, lead, and fluoride. And this, of course, is underway. But it was the announcement that followed that I think really lit the touch paper. The company at the same time provided an overall corporate and operational update, where it reported a group revenue increase of 236% in the first quarter of 2022, which included the contribution to the takeoff a joint venture in Tajikistan. Revenues jumped 236% to 2.28 million, up from 970,000 last year. Now, Butterfly revenues actually fell to 620,000, but the other project revenues generated 1.6 million. So you can get some idea of just how significant this is. And of course, this literally hit this news hit the wires yesterday morning. So the volume and the trading that's taken place in the company, you can only imagine. I imagine there were hundreds of private investors or retail investors scrambling for stock at the open yesterday. But of course, what this does, it's transformed the company's revenue stream potential and at the same time brought a lot more cash into the company to enable the company to fund its own development. And I think this is the plan going forward. There's a very certainly the quarter two production outlook is expected to generate increased levels of ore processing in the second quarter. And the company said in the update the changes it's made are forecast to result substantially increased production levels of copper concentrate in June 2022, which will reflect in financial results from quarter three 2022 onwards. A raft of other changes and developments as well in terms of bringing the other projects online. So that was the first update of what I think will be many detailed updates as we go forward into the second and third quarters this year. But a very exciting move by the company. And still, you know, given I think the assets the company now has under its control, we've still got a market cap of just 12.4 million. So those that were lucky to get on board yesterday, some of course will be taking profits because they'll have seen a fantastic return. But at the same time, I think many other investors will stick with it because it looks to me as though there's an awful lot more to come.
Yes, and certainly that valuation compared to the revenue that they posted there. I mean, you're looking at a situation roughly where if you analyse the revenue from the first quarter, that equates to, you know, there's obviously a bit of a disparity there, roughly the current market cap.
Yeah, indeed.
So,
yeah.
Trading at one time sales is, for a junior miner, is pretty good value.
Well, it's unheard of, isn't it? Really, mining companies are valued on the assets they have in the ground that are yet to see the light of day. But of course, Vast is already producing from its assets that it has, and it also has so many speculative assets in the ground that it's yet to develop too.
Indeed. And obviously, looking through the report, there's a number of holes that look set to come into production in the very near future, so that will only add to the current figures. Of course, if we see metal prices remain at current levels and they're able to maintain their current level of production, certainly one that may be worth having a look at there. So, recap of the stocks that we discussed today. First of all, it was Aston Martin with a ticker of AML. It was then JD Weatherspoons, which has a ticker of JDW. And just then was Vast Resources with a ticker of VAST. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
Just as a note to listeners, we held the UK Investor Magazine Investment Trusts virtual conference last night. We had presentations from M&G Investment, Aberdeen and Premier Miton. Do check out the videos to those. There's particularly interesting presentations there. There's some great insight into how people are picking up trusts at the moment, as well as from one of them, a good installment of insight on the property markets. So do check that out. They're due to go on the UK Investor Magazine website in the video section at some point on Wednesday. Thank you very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast
are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.